wickedness and godlessness. What is it about them? They always seem to never be content on their own. They always have to seek out the good and try to destroy it. They always have to seek out and find what is opposite of itself and try to encompass it into its own wickedness. We see it everywhere, everywhere around us, everywhere we go. It's always bad company that leads to the fall of good people. It's always the evil that try to take away the good from society. And we see it throughout history so many times. Wickedness coming and trying to impose its own will on those who are just peacefully existing, trying to do good, trying to keep to themselves. Communism is itself evil. Communism is inherently evil. It's so for a few reasons. One is that it is against private ownership of property, that a person cannot own their own possessions, which is actually contrary to the seventh commandment. And you might say to yourself, wait a second, Father, that says don't steal. It doesn't say don't own. But it's exactly that part of the commandment that is important for us to understand. There's an implied right to ownership if you are forbidden to taking it away from somebody without their permission. We have a right to own our own things, and communism as a system stands in the way of that. But more importantly, it is wicked and evil because it is godless in its own self-identity. It is atheistic as an ideal. And as such, of course, that is a violation of the first commandment. That it places itself in the place of God himself. By extension of that, we see the evilness coming from it. And we see that it can't help itself but to strip man of his basic liberties, to take away his rights, to take away his choice, to take away anything and all things that are good to him, so that it must impose itself as the all-powerful being in his eyes. This was apparent and true from the very beginning of communist revolution in the world. 1917, of course, we know the Bolsheviks finally took over in Russia and turned it into the Soviet Union. But they wasted no time in simply just looking and saying, we have the largest country in the world, and now we've created our own communistic state, we should be happy. No. Immediately their sights set out upon that which was good elsewhere, and we must seize that too. Nobody can have what we don't have. And so by 1918, the Soviet Union had already gone off and invaded Poland. They'd come to seize their rights, to seize their freedom, to take away their ownership and liberties. They couldn't stand to look at their neighbor and think of them as happier than themselves. And so the Polish-Soviet War began in 1918. The Poles knew that there stood before them a great trial that they were going to have to endure. They were greatly outnumbered. They were greatly outarmed, and their backs were truly up against the wall. It seemed that, independent of anything else, there was no hope for victory for their part, and they surely must be overrun and taken over and forced into the servitude of the communist system that their neighbors held fast to. Yet, for the Poles, they still prepared themselves to fight. They still got themselves ready to stand up for what was right and for their rights. And they got themselves prepared to fight most of all for the preservation of their Catholic faith. That was the most important aspect to hold fast to. Despite overwhelming odds, the people joined together as one voice, crying to heaven by prayer each and every single day that they may be spared from the scourge of their neighbors. It dragged on, the war, that is, for quite a while. And in July of 1920, it was still waging 2 years after it had begun, when there was a young priest, 27 years old, named Father Ignacy Skorupka. And he, as a young priest, looked on and couldn't stand by the side any longer. He knew he had to put his hat in the fight as well. So he volunteered to be a military chaplain, to go and to serve the souls of those who were defending their homeland and their faith. And so he was assigned to the 236th Infantry Regiment, and soon found himself right in the middle of the Battle of Warsaw, the largest of all of the battles that were fought during this war. The Battle of Warsaw was not just a big fight. It was the Poles' last stand. They found themselves being routed. They found themselves on the brink of collapse. And they found their chief cities soon about to be overrun when they began this battle there in the city of Warsaw and the surrounding countrysides. During the fighting, Father Skorupka served his fellow soldiers faithfully, regularly putting himself in harm's way, regularly going forth out into the midst of the fighting in order to find a wounded man, to hear his last confession, to anoint him, to give him all of the spiritual needs that he had to go on to paradise. And on the 14th of August, 1920, he did just that one last time. He saw and heard the screams of a wounded man out in the middle of the battlefield. And from cover, he ran forth without any thought to his own safety or well-being. He slid there into the dirt and came to the wounded man and took out his oil stock and immediately began to do the prayers and to give the man his last anointing. From what happened after that, accounts vary. Some have come to us and said that he was shot and killed while anointing the man on the ground. It's truly a heroic death indeed, in the eyes of the faith. Yet there are other accounts which tell the story a little bit differently. In fact, it was the official transmission, the dispatch, from the battlefield itself, with his own eyewitnesses, that actually told a little bit more about what happened to Father Skorupka. By their accounts, he did do just that, run out into the middle of the battlefield, bend down and anoint the dying man there in the dirt. Yet that wasn't where he was wounded and ultimately killed. Rather, seeing the man there laying in the dirt, he looked back at the fellow soldiers who were still behind cover, there safe. And in one swift motion, he grabbed the crucifix from his pocket and raised it high in the air and let out a loud cry, encouraging his men to charge the enemy and take the fight to them. The men rose up from behind the wall that they were taking shelter and joined their priest up on the battlefield, running full speed ahead right into the enemy lines. And it's with that the priest, in cassock and surplice and stole, with cross high above his head, that finally those fatal blows came and struck him down to the ground, the 27-year-old young man and holy priest. In the end, it became a rallying cry for the Poles, and they won the Battle of Warsaw. The Battle of Warsaw was won so significantly, in fact, that it led to the Russians returning back to Russia and a peace treaty being signed, and the Polish people and their faith were ultimately saved. Today, we fight that very same enemy. It hasn't gone away. In fact, when we think about it, especially in light of today being the Great Marian Feast of the Assumption, connected with all that we struggle with on a day-to-day basis, we realize that truly this is something that was foretold to us by heaven itself. Our Lady of Fatima warned us of the coming scourge. She told us that had her third secret not been revealed by 1958, and had Russia not been consecrated to the Immaculate Heart, then the errors of Russia would spread throughout the world. And so, like the Bolsheviks coming to Poland in 1920, we find ourselves facing this common enemy. We find ourselves most especially seeing it around the holiest times of the year. The waves of fighting come to us at Holy Week, at Christmas time, and here at the Assumption. And we look and think to ourselves, how overwhelming are the forces against us? Yet that is a fatalistic error if we let ourselves focus on that as our reality. Yes, we are outnumbered. Yes, our voices are tried to be stifled. But when we think of ourselves by ourselves, certainly there's no hope of success. But when we turn to heaven, and that army joins together with us, why would we ever think we could fail? The answer is the same as it was for the Poles 100 years ago. The answer is for us to stand up and to be bold. It is for us to have courage in the face of all the adversity that we face on a regular basis today. To not give any credence to their lies. To not give any bowing of the knee to their misinformation and their fear and their mongering that they want to hold us captive to. To make sure that we stand up and say, we will not accept the things that they try to force upon us. We will not accept their jab. We will not accept their mask. We will not accept their lockdowns and their eradication of our rights, liberties, and religious freedom. No, instead it takes us to be bold and stand up in the face of that adversity and realize that it must be joined to prayer and to sacrifice. A real persevering prayer. One that doesn't just last a day or a week, but one that lasts as long as it takes. A real understanding of sacrifice that means that we know it's going to hurt. That we know that we're going to have to give of ourselves, make ourselves uncomfortable. These are the things that unite us to the army of heaven and will see us be successful. It's exactly what Father Skorupka knew. He knew that it might take giving of himself. He gave his entire self. It is what Our Lady knew. She knew that one day she would give her only begotten son. And yet, that a great victory of heaven was won by such a sacrifice too. And so we look at ourselves and realize we must give. We must be bold. We must be strong. But behind the cross, with the grace of Our Lady that she distributes to us, why would we fear such a stance? And why would we cower behind any kind of lie? May God bless you in the name of the Father and the Son.